हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनाभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, question on the bottom of 14. Brajanath, when such a flow of ecstatic emotions is inspired, are we to conclude that Rati for Krishna is within the devotee? Raghavan Das Babaji, not necessarily. The independent, spontaneous effusion of feelings within the heart for Krishna is Rati, transcendental loving attachment. However, shedding tears in such emotions can be inspired by other conditions, which are not necessarily Rati. Okay. Point two. Footnote 2. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 2.3.24, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has very critically discussed all these bhava displays in connection with some unscrupulous neophytes imitating the above symptoms for cheap appreciation. Not only Vishwanath Chakravarti, but also Srila Rupa Goswami treated them very critically. Sometimes all the above 8 symptoms of ecstasy are imitated by the mundane devotees, Prakriti Sahajiyas. But the pseudo-symptoms are at once detected when one sees the pseudo-devotee addicted to so many forbidden things. Even though decorated with the signs of a devotee, a person addicted to smoking, drinking, or illegitimate sex with women cannot have all the above-mentioned ecstatic symptoms. But it is seen that sometimes these symptoms are willfully imitated, and for this reason Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti accuses the imitators of being stone-hearted men. They are sometimes even affected by the reflection of such transcendental symptoms. Yet, if they still do not give up the forbidden habits, then they are hopeless cases for transcendental realization. Right, so then there's the element of reflection of such transcendental. So one might get from the performance of service some reflection of this element of bhava. But then the point is that then there should be a natural attachment and attraction to devotional service and the giving up of the material endeavors, right? Otherwise, if not, then one is stone-hearted, right? He is attached to the one thing but imitating the other simply for prestige. So this is not, the way devotional service works. When Lord Chaitanya met Srila Ramananda Rai of Kavaur on the bank of the Godavari, the Lord developed all these symptoms, but because of the presence of some non-devotee brahmanas who are attendants of the Rai, the Lord suppressed these symptoms. So sometimes they are not visible, even in the body of the first-class devotee, for certain circumstantial reasons. Therefore, real, steady bhava is definitely displayed in the matter of cessation of material desires, shanti, utilization of every moment in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, avarta kalatvam, Srimad Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhulila 23:18-19. Eagerness for glorifying the Lord constantly, nama ganeya sararuchi, Madhulila 23:32. Attraction for living in the land of the Lord, pritisthad vasanti stale, pritisthad vasati stale. Complete detachment from material happiness, virakti, and pridelessness, mana shunyata. One who has developed all these transcendental qualities is really possessed of the bhava stage, as distinguished from the stone-hearted imitator or mundane devotee. Right. So the point is that those six symptoms or eight symptoms. It was eight, right? Eight symptoms. When those are manifest, then you can say that the ecstasy that's there, then that confirms that that's bhava. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, if you just see the symptoms without just see the varieties of ecstasy without these eight symptoms of detachment from the material world that's always attached to Krishna, all these different things, then it just means that it's either some aspect of the reflection of bhava or somebody's imitating. Like that, yes.
The reflection of bhava, that's like a temporary rush of...
Yes, just means according to the situation, one's very nicely absorbed, so you get some aspect of that.
Yeah.
But then after that, one goes back to, you know...
Back to those.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of... Yeah, it's not a good example, but the element of just the starkness of it. I remember seeing these two minor birds. There's one kind of mina. There's two kinds, the brown one, and then there's the yellower one. So when they get together, then they make so much noise, singing and that, and they rock, you know, like which one's walking this way, the other that way. So they're just right next to each other, right? You know, just a couple of centimeters apart, and they sit there and going on like this, and they're so happy and that. And suddenly, at one moment, it stops because somebody saw a bug or something and just off and getting the bug and, like that. And then sometimes, if they're not too far apart, they get back together and start again, you know, like that. But it's like everything goes on until, you know, oh hey, you know, like that. Yeah. So it's like, you know, devotional kirtan's going on, this, that, and then an SMS. Oh, wait a minute, I got you know, like that. You know, then, you know, so that means is that because of the power of devotional service, that rati is infused there, so there is that element, but it's not on the platform of bhava. As we were pointing out before, is that bhava is what is actually that potency that's imbued in the devotee starting from Shraddha. But when these eight symptoms are manifest and then all these ecstasies are there, then one's at the stage of bhava. Otherwise, then the manifestation of that bhava potency then takes on Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Lanartan, like this. Does that make sense? So the more it's there, then the greater is the reaction from it. But if when it's constant, that's bhava. Yes.
Maharaj, I was just wondering, does the rati necessarily take place first between the disciple and the guru? Or?
No, not necessarily. It's just, because the point is it's Krishna, whatever is the form of Krishna, the name, form, qualities, pastimes, associates, dham, that doesn't matter. It's all about Krishna. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah, it's okay.
Are you saying that bhava is the thing which moves one from one stage, like Shraddha, to the next stage, Sadhu Sangha, but then when that becomes steady, it's called the bhava stage?
Yes. In other words, it's the potency that attracts one to the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord. It's the potency. Then when that attraction becomes steady and constant, then that stage is called bhava. But it's the potency of bhava that one is progressing through, that one is attracted, therefore Shraddha. You know, more attracted, therefore Sadhu Sangha. So when but these are in the, you know, not so mature. Then when it's mature, then it's nishta. So then one's steady, but that element of that taste, right? You know, in other words, it is both the attraction to and the experience of these things, right? So that nishta, then that attraction becomes steady, but the taste and all that hasn't mattered. But then at ruchi, then we can say, this then seriously begins the preliminary stages of bhava, right? So, but this is still the madhyamadhikari. This is a madhyam, right? Then at asakti, that's the uttam madhyam, then it's much more. And then one moves into bhava, right? And bhava is like the bud of prema, right? So that's why that bhava can also be rati, the loving attraction, right? You know, like that, because it's the first stage. Vrajanath. Gurudev, kindly illustrate this point with a few examples. Raghunathas Babaji. An aspirant for mukti chants Hare Krishna at the stage of Namabhas, the shadow of Shuddha Nam. He hears that Namabhas has the power to give mukti and is provided with the relevant Shastric Praman. When he hears this proof, he is stirred to profuse tears and falls down in the face, faint. This cannot be described as Krishna Rati, because he has no spontaneous and unalloyed attraction for Krishna. He simply displays these emotions, which are nearly bhava, in other words, bhava bhas, only out of covetedness for his personal objective, and the fact that such practices may help him to achieve the same. Further, a seeker of mundane pleasure worships Durga Devi, praying for the materialistic boons of health, wealth, etc. He hears about the mystic potency of Durga Devi to fulfill such wishes and is moved to tears, rolls on the ground, and so on. These symptoms are not bhava. At best, they are bhava bhas, or perhaps even bhava dhoratmya, crocodile tears with evil intent. Whatever the case may be, true bhava symptoms are never manifest or experienced without a long history of constant devotional service with unalloyed motivation to love Sri Krishna. Aspirations for bhakti and mukti, even if they happen to be related to Krishna, sometimes invoke bhava bhas symptoms that are often also bhava turatmya symptoms. Right. The emotions shown by people who are contaminated by mayavad thoughts are all bhava turatmya. Even if such a person has been lying unconscious before the deity of Krishna for days, it cannot be called bhava. Even the most elevated liberated souls and sages who have categorically renounced the world intensely aspire to attain bhava. Bhava is the recondite treasure that Krishna rarely discloses, even to those who have been engaged in bhajan for immeasurably extended periods. So how can this divine bhava, Krishna Rati, blossom in arid hearts devoid of Shuddha Bhakti, where the desire for either bhakti or mukti surges? All right, so in other words, where there's the desire for pure devotion, then we'll see aspects. But if there's not that desire for pure devotion, then even though it may appear in this way, it's not actually that. Right. Vrajanath, Gurudev, sometimes while performing Harinam Kirtan, hedonistic men and salvationists exhibit the symptoms you have just described. What feelings are these? Raghunath Das Babaji. Only ignorant and foolish people are impressed by such a show bottle display of emotions. Those who are actually conversant with the philosophy of bhava will immediately recognize them as rati abhas, duplications which should be carefully avoided. Vijaya, how many kinds of rati abhas are there? Raghunath Das Babaji, there are two varieties of rati abhas, pratibimba rati abhas, a reflected semblance of rati, and chaya rati abhas, a shadow-like resemblance of rati. Right, so one's a reflection, one's a shadow. Vijaya, what is pratibimba rati abhas? Raghunath Das Babaji, mukti cannot be attained without knowledge of Brahman. The process to acquire this knowledge is extremely tedious and difficult. A person may desire mukti but does not want to embark on the strict disciplines required by this path. He learns it by chanting of Sri Hari's name, one is rewarded with mukti and considers that this chanting is easy to perform. When he imagines how easily Brahman realization could be thus acquired, strong emotions well up and he begins to cry. His hair stands on end, and so on. This is pratibimba rati abhas, and nothing more spectacular. Okay. Reflected semblance. Right? So in other words, he gets the full understanding of how this chanting can give him liberation, so that then he gets all kinds of ecstatic emotions because of that understanding, not because it's absorption in Krishna. Right? What is chaya rati abhasa? Raghunath Das Babaji. Simple Kanishtha devotees who are inexperienced in the intricacies of spiritual science curiously perceive the slight stirrings of bhava symptoms in their hearts. When they come into contact with the favored places, holy occasions, pastimes, etc. of the Supreme Lord. These bhava symptoms are factually the nebulous shadow form of real spiritual emotions. Hence they are designated as chaya, shadow. At this stage, the bhakti of the neophyte is a little more distinct, but not yet firm. The chaya rati abhash, form of rati abhash, appears particularly at this juncture. Chaya rati abhash occurs as a result of scores of pious deeds and may gradually lead the neophyte to higher realization and greater spiritual fortune, especially by frequent association with saintly and elevated Vaishnavas, who give their mercy as a catalyst. The real and pristine form of Shuddha Bhava may easily appear from this raw ingredient called chayarati, shadow attachment. Though this form of chayarati is highly beneficial to the neophyte, offenses to Vaishnavas will trigger off reversals in spiritual practice, painfully causing the chayarati to dwindle like the waning moon of the dark fortnight. Even pure Shuddha Bhava, what to speak of Chaya Bhava, begins to wither if touched by the poisonous tentacles of offenses to the Vaishnavas. Right. So we see here is when it's shadow, that it's like the thing, because the shadow of something is connected with the real thing, but it's not actually the real thing. It is from that, but it's not that. Does that make sense? So, therefore, for the neophyte, then by coming in contact with all the elements that are recommended for devotional service, these devotional symptoms of ecstasy, then are to some degree manifest. And so that will inspire them to continue in the process. And this way, then, they advance more and more and get more and more inspired. Right? But if the fences are there, then even that can go away. So he says not only that, even pure bhava, from bhava one can fall from, due to offenses, right? Let alone from any lower position. So that's why it's always focused on always avoid offenses, because that's what really makes the trouble. So that makes sense? Yeah?
Maharaj, Prati Bengarati Bhas, was it said before that the feelings of liberation could be experienced in kirtan?
It's not that, it's when they appreciate that they can get liberation from that. Just like if you feel I can get something I really desire, then you're very happy. You know what I'm saying? The guy, when he finally figures out how he can make the proper down payments on his Ferrari, then, you know, all kinds of, you know, standing of hair on the end and tears, and all these manifest. But it's not, it's what it is, a reflection, it's not real. You know what I'm saying? The point is that in both of these, in the bhava, how you say, pratibimba, you know, this, and the nama, you know, pratibimba, both of them are reflections. They're not actually real. They look like, but they're not real. But those are all connected with those who are, you know, mayavadi, so that material element. The devotee, then, is chaya, means it's a reflection of that. So when devotees chant chaya nama bhas, right, so that means it's the shadow of the holy name. So it's real in that it's connected to, but it's not actually what you call the substance of, you know, pure chanting or pure bhava. But by following that without offenses, one will be purified and come to the transcendental platform.
What is that freedom from suffering then? You know, that the Buddhists can freedom from the conditioning, the conditioned nature, you know, of course, and subtle conditioning, like deep peace and the nice of the kirtan, the niceness of the kirtan, freedom from all material suffering.
I don't understand. It's just part of the process. It's when you perform devotional service, then that knowledge and detachment automatically come along with it. They're part of the package deal. Those are side things. Just like when you go to a restaurant, order a meal, you know, plates and spoons and cups come along with it.
Yeah. What I mean to say is, like, there's sometimes there's peak experiences, but then again, one is put back in the conditioning.
Yeah, because that's, you focus on the conditioning, that becomes prominent. You focus on the devotional practices, then the other becomes prominent. It's just where you're focusing, right? So if one is practicing nicely, then it naturally progresses. If one's practicing seeming nicely but not, then the fences are there. That will slow. Otherwise, then we see without offenses, then the process can move quite nicely, quite quickly. In certain persons, even though they are not engaged in devotional service, bhava symptoms may suddenly appear. From such an occurrence, it may be surmised that these persons have executed Shuddha Bhakti in their previous lives. But because of impediments, at that time, bhava could not mature and fully manifest. As soon as these unknown impediments are removed, symptoms of Shuddha Bhava appear and are crystallized. The Shuddha Bhava is indeed Krishna Prashadaja, evoking reactions of wonder and amazement among the general public. It is bestowed by the causeless mercy of Krishna. Right. So here he's talking about is that you have persons, though they're not engaged in devotional service, when they come in contact with it, and then suddenly they're manifesting very, very advanced symptoms. That's because in the previous lives, they've executed bhakti up to that point, but there's some impediments, you know, some offense or something that has stopped the devotional practice. Mm. So then all it is now, it is starting again.
Yeah.
So by Krishna's grace, it starts again. So you just suddenly see someone's gone from just the beginning stage to something very advanced very quickly. But as you mentioned before, this is very rare. It's possible. It happens, but it's rare.
Yes. That's what Prabhupada says, when you leave and you take up the process again, you start from the platform that you
yes. stopped. Yeah, like that. So it's just like, let's say, the devotee is there, he's very serious in devotional service, he becomes distracted, right? So then they'll take birth in the family of devotees, right? And so then as a kid, they do what kids do. But if at some point they become serious about devotional service, they become serious quite quickly. It means maybe quite, you know, quite quickly it becomes very, very, very mature. That's because they've already done it before, but then it's just been stopped. Right? And so once they take it up again, then it moves very nicely. Right? And if not, then they do a lot of partying.
You also see devotees from the West who were born in not devotees' families, who also take it up very quickly.
Yeah, well, that means it's not only is it something's distracted, but then is according to Mano, it's low thoughts. So then
offenses.
One's born in low families.
Offenses.
Yeah. It's not necessarily offenses, it's just that the thoughts are not ideal.
Yeah.
Right? So then, you know, low thoughts are attributed to those in low birth. So therefore, then they're born there. So, but you notice that they don't really seem to belong there.
Yeah.
Because that's not their natural position.
Mm.
Okay. Shall I make sure?
Yeah.
Yeah. In the case where genuine Shuddha Bhava is reposed in a devotee, but certain faults and discrepancies are discernible in his character, the devotee should not be treated intemperately or intolerantly. Intemperately or intolerantly? I remember, what is intemperately?
Temper?
Treat someone temperately would mean to be, it's like tolerant, but deal with them very mildly.
Oh, it means, so don't deal intemperately means you should be pleasant.
Yeah.
So it means you should, okay, you should never deal roughly or intolerantly with them. Okay. Because such a devotee imbued with Shuddha Bhava is surely and increasingly lifted by his transcendental phenomena to sublime heights of spiritual success. Thus, such a devotee with Shuddha Bhava cannot perform evil deeds. However, if such discrepancies are noticed, then there are two ways to see them. This elevated devotee has committed a sinful act by some providential arrangement, but this is not a permanent slur on his character, or the reactions of the devotee's previous sins are still lingering on even after the event of Shuddha Bhava, though they will very soon recede and cease. If any person insists on pinning blame and Calumny?
I think it's evil.
Evil. Okay.
Criminal act.
Huh?
Like criminal act.
Okay. Pinning blame and like criminality or something. Okay. On such a pure devotee, he invites the wrath of Namaparad upon himself. So that's why one one makes a distinction between someone who's not a devotee and nonsense behavior. Neophyte, you know, and nonsense behavior, and advanced and nonsense behavior. It means they're all different stages, like that. The point is, once one's involved in devotional service, then the inauspiciousness of material life will very quickly go away. But, so there's a difference between one who's, even though it'll quickly go away, still has that kind of attachment to the material, then it will be slower to quickly go away. And the one who is basically absorbed in Krishna, in that it's by circumstance or whatever it is, happens, something happens, then just by the nature of their devotional absorption, it will go away very quickly. Right. So the other one, they'll be doing that for a long time because they don't know any difference, the materialist. You know, how many lifetimes one can't say. But for the devotee, then that's going to be dealt with very quickly. And that's just a matter of whether they're committed to the process so it can act very quickly or not. Like that. So that's why devotees are dealt with in a slightly different method. And otherwise, he says that then you bring Namaparad, like that. It says the wrath of Namaparad. You know, so in other words, like Bhava is a potency, so Namaparad is also a potency. This injunction must not mislead us to think that it is all right if devotees become compulsive sinners, right? So now he's giving the other side. In other words, we don't criticize, we don't do that, but at the same time, it's not all right if devotees become compulsive sinners. The fact is that the very desire for committing sins is expunged once the devotee becomes steadfast in bhakti. Yet as long as the body is there, accidents may happen, and thus a devotee may commit sins inadvertently. As soon as that occurs, Bhakti Devi instantly incinerates to ashes the devotee's sins and warns the devotee against repeating them. Right, so she's removing the sins, so that's why there's no such thing as prayaschitta. Like that, we're thinking we're going to give something to purify. Bhakti Devi herself is taking care of that. Right, so for us, the main thing is creating a situation in which one has good association and those elements like that. But warns them against repeating them. You know, so she'll have, depending upon the how good a listener you are, it may be more subtle or more obvious. A devotee who continuously commits sin has most certainly not developed ananya bhakti to the Lord. Because a sincere devotee can never perpetuate devotionally fatal acts shamelessly whilst relying on the absolving potency of Bhakti Devi, for this is a serious offense. In other words, he's just going on, it doesn't matter because devotional service is so powerful to go away. No, he's thinking this is not good, right? So this has to stop, but for some reason it may or may not be going away so quickly, right? Does that make sense? There's a difference. So that point is that this element of shameless, right? One has to be very careful about it. It's not okay. Because we said the other, you can't don't find fault there. But that doesn't mean it's okay. It just means we don't find fault. Right? Because then the devotee, it will very quickly go away. Right? Of course, we have to be also very careful that we don't have all kinds of nice intellectual and moralistic ways to redefine their position as a devotee by saying, no, if they do this, they're not a devotee. But the point is, you have one or the other. Sometimes they're going on at the same time. You know, someone has to be very careful. Otherwise, we'll say no. But if they did that, then they're not a devotee, or it's not. I mean, so you have to be very careful about that. You have to see all the other symptoms. What's around that? What's been the history? What's been the like that? You know, does that make sense? They've always been a nonsense, and that's another thing. But if they haven't been, and then something comes up, then you take it that this is something temporary. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah, and be careful what it means shamelessly. You know. The nature of bhava Rati is to increase the desire of the devotee for divine love gradually and constantly. Thus, because of its restless nature, bhava is volatile and embodies intense bliss. Although bhava churns up the torrid sanchari bhavas, impelling ecstatic emotion, still it remains more soothing than a million moon rays. Right. So these are all the how you say it? What's that term? Achintya. Right? This aspect of where it's inconceivable how you have all these different things. Bhava being independent. Right? It's volatile by nature. So just suddenly something can come up. At the same time as, even though it creates this great overflooding of emotions and this ecstatic emotion, it says here, the torrid sanchari bhavas. Mm-hmm. Right? Because, see, others are, it means the sthayi bhava, it'll probably come up, right? Later, talking about the five aspects of bhava. Sthayi bhava, vibhava, anubhava, like this. So we'll get into that later. But those are various aspects of bhava bhakti. And also, you know, prema, just the prema itself. So, sthayi bhava means your fixed attitude. Like Mother just showed, is fixed in parental rasa. So that won't change. That's steady. Then things connected to Krishna, right? Krishna himself, things connected to Krishna that invoke those feelings of that rasa from the devotee. That's sthayi bhava, that's vibhava, right? Anubhava are these underlying symptoms that manifest, the activities that then one performs from that, right? Then there's going to be the bodily, sattvika bhavas, the various bodily manifestations that are there that may be a result of the activity of anubhava and like this. Right, but then you have the sanchari bhavas. These are ones that constantly are changing, move. They're just mental states that are there, and then cause the various symptoms within the body. There's 33 of those. Those are constantly moving. Right, so he's pointing out that even though there's all this static motion, constantly moving, changing, and it's very volatile, still it remains more soothing than a million moons. Right, because we're taking that when things get too wild here. You know, it's already, you know, crazy. You know, it's like the guy just had a bad day at the office. Then he's, you know, goes out and gets into the car, starts driving, and he's out of petrol. Then he goes and gets that. Then there's a traffic jam. You know, then it just gets better and better, right? You know, then, you know, when he drives into the driveway, then, you know, there's some guy that, you know, whoever it is, or the wife's friend that he doesn't really like, or the car's in the driveway. You know, then he walks into the house, and then there's some other riot going on. You know, so just, you know, the more it goes, then the more you're thinking, this is not good. You just want it to be peaceful, right? But the point is this emotion, it gives that peaceful effect, even though it's so volatile, because it's transcendental, right? The material is meant to give you trouble because we're not meant to have that. It's a misapplication of ananda. Trying to get ananda from dead matter is always going to give you trouble. You know what I'm saying? It's just like we have these rocks. Now, they're nice rocks, right? You know, like this. These are nice, you know, river rocks, you know, nice and smooth, you know, have some quartz and other interesting, you know, minerals in them, you know, very decorative in that. But it doesn't matter what cuisine we apply upon them. It's never going to work out right. You know, make them into nice, you know. Well, they're round in that, so we could put them like in a sauce like gnocchi, right? You know, like that. You know, so like that. Or maybe, you know, the Chinese, well, we can maybe replace the mushrooms with them, you know, like that. But, I mean, they are a little light, maybe. But, and you can't tie little knots in them, can you? So, okay, so maybe the tofu, okay? You know, like that. And, or the Indian cooking, you know, maybe, you know, put them in a paneer sabji or something like that. It doesn't matter what you do. Roll them up, put them in your burritos, you know, okay? It doesn't matter. It's not going to work out. So that's how the material world is. It doesn't matter what you do, it won't work. It's just designed like that. But we have this idea, no, but maybe it was, you know, I didn't, you know.
Or,
Pakoras, yeah. You didn't think about that. Pakoras. Now we're talking. Right? Because then you can't tell it's Ramasa at all. You know? Or you could do then pakoras and then put that into a sauce, you know, like that, you know, like a
kofta.
Kofta, yeah. Okay, yeah, now we're talking, right? But still,
he's a cook.
It's not going to work out. Okay, okay.
You can get him to do it.
Okay, okay, yeah. So you pick out the rocks and we'll cook them up, right? You know. Okay, does that make sense? It's just not going to work. So therefore, even though it churns up so much emotion, it's still more soothing than a million moon rays. You know? So that's the principle. Because you're dealing in the spiritual platform there. At this point in their discussion, Vrajanath and Vijay appeared to be deeply pondering over the concepts and principles of Bhava Tattva. Simultaneously, Babaji Maharaj seemed to withdraw into himself. Vijaya Kumar patiently waited for an opportune moment. Interjected Gurudev, Vrajanath is young and his mother wants him to enter household life, but he is not prepared to do so. Kindly tell us what we should do. Right? Waiting for that opportune moment. Yeah, like that. Bhava Bhakti and then... Got to pick the right moment, you know, it's like that. Yeah, so it means, do you've ever had problem trying to make the wedding arrangements and that's because you didn't interject during a serious discussion of Bhava Tattva. That's it, yeah. Raghunath Das Babaji. You have received Sri Krishna's blessings, so convert your household into Krishna's household and serve him. May everyone follow the advice of Sri Chaitanya. There are two orders of devotees in the world, householders and renunciates. A person must remain in the household until he's ready to renounce that situation. In this way, serve Krishna as a householder devotee. Our dear Sri Chaitanya displayed pastimes in his first 24 years as a householder, which stand out as a perfect example for Vaishnava householders. His pastimes in the final 24 years as a renunciate are examples to be emulated by renunciates and inspiring sannyasis. My recommendation to you is this. Study the householder life of the Lord and sincerely try to follow in his footsteps, at least for the present. You must not think that the highest level of Krishna prema is beyond the reach of the householder devotees. The majority of the close associates of Mahaprabhu were householders, and they were certainly the direct recipients of his mercy. Even renunciate Vaishnavas pray to be blessed by receiving the sacred dust of the lotus feet of the Lord's householder devotees upon their heads. Right? So, no, it's interesting here is the question comes up. Right? And then just immediately says, yes, so therefore you should get married.
Mm, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right? Because that's how it works.
Yeah.
Right? Chanakya says, if you don't know whether to eat or don't eat, don't eat, right? And if you don't know whether to travel or not travel, don't travel. And if you don't know whether to get married or not get married, right? Does that make sense? Because the point is if you don't know, you should get married. Like he's not sure whether he should enter household life or not. So that means he should. Because if he shouldn't, he would already know that.
It wouldn't come up.
Yeah, it just wouldn't come up. Means mother's bringing it up, but he doesn't want to address it. But he's not really sure if he should get married or not. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the difference. Vijay and Vrajanath offered their obeisances. So in other words, if you connect everything to Krishna, it doesn't matter what the situation. That's the point being made. Right? And so, therefore, coming to the platform of prema, then could be done as a householder, like that. But one should follow in the footsteps of how Lord Chaitanya, you know, handled his household. Does that make sense? Not just looking at how he was renounced, but how he engaged, how he interacted, how he dealt. You know, that's the things. That's generally what's missed out. You know. Vijaya and Vrajanath offered their obeisances to Sri Raghunath Das Babaji Maharaj and took leave. Though it was very late, they joined the other Vaishnavas of Sri Vasangan and spent the rest of the night singing and chanting Krishna Nam. Early the next morning, they completed ablutions, took a bath, and attended the spiritual program in the temple. At noon, they honored Mahaprasad with the Vaishnavas, soon thereafter leaving and making their way slowly back home. At the Bilva Pushkarini Lake, they sat down, and after considering all they had heard from Babaji Maharaj, decided to continue in household life and serve Sri Krishna in that way. Right? Because one is married, and one is, the arrangements are being made to get married. Right? So they, you know, because, means, in other words, he is living at home, so he's in Grihastha life, he's just not officially Grihastha. Does that make sense? Vijay Kumar broke the news to his sister, the mother of Vrajanath, so she could make all the necessary arrangements for the marriage of Vrajanath. The mother and grandmother of Vrajanath were beside themselves with joy, right? So here's a, you know, element of possibly, you know, Pratibimba, you know, how you say it? Baba, right? You know, like that. Yes. Leaving for a few days to Modruma Dweep, Vijaya Kumar was sent off with a new wardrobe according to the custom. Upon reaching his destination, he immediately sent his younger brother, Harinatha, to help the mother of Vrajanath with the preparations. Okay.
A new wardrobe, that would just be like a gift of a new chatter or something like that.
I'm not sure what it is. Be new wardrobe would mean, you know, clothes.
Not a
cupboard.
Hmm?
Not a cupboard.
Yeah, yeah, you know, nicely hand carved, you know, like that. Yeah. Or this is so tough. Summary of chapter 23. Nitya Dharma, Sambandha Abhideya and Prayojana. Part 11. The initial discussion of Nama Tattva. The next day, Vijaya and Vrajanath arrived at Shiva's Angan while the evening artik was still in progress. As usual, the Vaishnavas assembled after the artik in the courtyard under the Bokal tree. Amongst them, the venerable Sri Raghunathas Babaji Maharaj, who was sitting and chanting upon his Tulsi beads. Oh, amongst them, okay. Vrajanath and Vijay Kumar approached humbly and offered prostrate obeisances. Babaji Maharaj embraced them and told them to sit comfortably, asking, "How is your progress in chanting and the practice of bhakti?" Vijay Kumar replied with folded hands, "Benign Gurudev, by your mercy, everything is auspicious for us. Please guide us in understanding the profound significance of Nam Tattva." The face of Raghunathas Babaji immediately lit up with joy and he began to speak. There are two categories of Harinam, Mukya and Gona. From the time of the creation of the universe, those names of Krishna that are associated with the material nature are Gona name, Nama, secondary names. For example, Srishti Karta, creator, Jagat Pala, the universal preserver, Vishwa Nityanta, the universal administrator, Vishwa Palaka, the universal maintainer, Paramatma, the supersoul, and so on. The word Brahman, although free from the modes of material nature, is also a Gona name. Though there are immense benefits from chanting these Gona names of Sri Krishna, they rarely bring forth transcendental results. So the piety is there, like that, but they don't give the transcendental results. They don't give love of God. Right? On the other hand, the names, rarely, because mostly people who are focused on those names are not interested in Shuddha Bhakti. Right? Otherwise, they'd be chanting the Mukya names. Yes. On the other hand, the names of the Supreme Lord associated with his transcendental spiritual abode are eternal and have nothing to do with the mundane plane. These names are absolute, spiritual, and known as Muktiyanama. principal names, for example, Narayana, Vasudeva, Janardana, Hrishikesha, Hari, Achyuta, Govinda, Gopala, Rama, and so on. The Mukhya Nama are of the spiritual sky and are non-different from the Supreme Lord Himself. The most fortunate souls in this universe attract the attention of Mukhya Nama with the purity of their bhakti, and Mukhya Nama dances upon their tongues in pristine glory. The Mukhya Nama have no connection with this phenomenal plane, are endowed with the complete shakti of Sri Bhagavan. They descend to this mundane illusory sphere to annihilate Maya. Therefore, the conditioned souls of the material world have no better friend and well-wisher than Hari Nam. The Brihad Naradiya Purana 38.1.2.3 declares, Hari Nam is my life and soul. Hari Nam is my life and soul. Hari Nam is my life and soul. In Kali Yuga, there's no other way. There's no other way. There's no other way to attain spiritual perfection other than the chanting of Hari Nam. Harinam has wonderful unlimited power and uproots all the sins of the conditioned souls. Burning in the great forest fire of sinful life, when one takes shelter of Harinam, one becomes free of all sufferings and disease. By loudly chanting Sri Nama, one destroys one's parabdha karma, the reactions to past pap and punya that are presently bearing fruit, right? Pap and punya, right? Means it gets rid of all that. Right, so if you're really worried about the good parabdha karma, then you know you're going to have a problem with this process. Right, in other words, devotional service creates all auspiciousness. Right, so all the facilities, all that that comes to the devotee, that facility is given by Krishna. So it's not from one's previous pious activities. Right, previous pious activities, you know. Birth in good families, education, beauty, wealth, all these different things, all that's removed, right? But the piety of chanting the holy name, then whatever Krishna, however he takes care of you, then that will be there. You understand? It's two different things. Right? Mm-hmm. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.3.44 states, Sri Hari Nam is glorious, chanted in any condition of life, whether almost dead, deadly sick, slipping, falling, or in any semi-conscious state, the name of Sri Bhagavan releases the chanting person from the bondage of karmic reactions and promotes him to the highest goal of spiritual achievement. The real pity is that the fallen people of Kali Yuga refuse to execute this devotional activity. Mm-hmm. So here it's saying is, almost dead, deathly sick, slipping, falling means you're doing something, you start to slip if you chant Krishna's name. You're freed from all karma. Any semi-conscious state, so even in that semi-conscious, you're able to chant or this or that. So then the Lord removes, and the highest goal of spiritual achievement, you'll bring one to that platform of love of God. Like that. Yes.
During illness, it can be very difficult to complete one's prescribed number of rounds. Should this, especially if like voice or something is affected? Or
you chant in the mind. Yeah. Point is chant. Yeah. So mental chanting, you're sick, you can do that all day because all you do is lay there. You know, so it's not like you're going anywhere.
Should it be like an opportunity?
Everything's an opportunity, so it's not that just only that's an opportunity. You know, also being healthy and chanting is also an opportunity. So, point is that's why I'm saying any condition. So whatever it is, take advantage in any condition of life. You know, so whatever it is, then take advantage of that. Point is, if one can loudly chant, then one does that. If one can't, chant quietly. If you can't do that, chant in the mind. That you can always do. Right, because it says here, even in a semi-conscious state. So, yeah. Hari Nam Kirtan is more glorious and beneficial than studying all the Vedas, and is better than pilgrimage to all the Tirthas. Right, because Manu was saying that Brahman who is chanting the holy name. you know, he has the benefit of having studied all the scriptures like that. So he's pointing out that the chanting of the holy name, that's the best of all activities that the Brahmana could be doing. Right? He's considered the most knowledgeable. He's considered, you know, performing the best activities. Right? Like that, you know. And then everything else is described if we're not quite convinced of that. Right? You know, or even if you are convinced of that, just what's the social system, how you deal with everybody. Right? And it's better than pilgrimage to all the tirthas. Even chanting Hari Nama Bhas, a semblance of Hari Nama, gives infinitely more results in performing all kinds of material piety. Right? So you can perform all the material piety very nicely, but you'll still get more benefit from Nama Bhas. Right? It means from Nama Bhas you can get liberation, you know, let alone all the pious credits that one's looking for. One desires of mukti may have all this desire fulfilled easily by chanting Hari Nam. Chanting Hari Nam is the topmost way of pleasing Sri Bhagavan. And Hari Nam has the potency to control Sri Bhagavan. Sri Hari Nam Kirtan is the most potent of all categories of bhakti sadhana. It means of all the five, then the Hari Nam is the most important. Mm-hmm. Even Nama Bhas is superior to all varieties of pious activities. Pious activities are primarily just a means to an end, material happiness. After the results have been offered and enjoyed, such pious works are depleted and become defunct. Right. Further, in any circumstance, such sat karma is entirely materialistic, whereas chanting Krishna Nam is a 100% transcendental activity. Thus, Krishna Nam is simultaneously the most efficacious means for self-realization, and at the same time, when the spiritual benefits of this practice mature, Krishna Nam is realized as the very goal. The Supreme Lord Sri Krishna himself. Right? Because the name is Krishna. Another vital point is that all the different limbs of bhakti are anchored in the chanting of Krishna Nam. Right? Deity worship means you're chanting Krishna Nam. Hearing Bhagavatam, you're chanting Krishna Nam. You're in the association of devotees, you're chanting Krishna Nam. Right? Does that make sense? All these different, you're all chanting the Lord's names.
Is that so? The same principle applies when Prabhupada is so often emphasized. Hearing is the most important thing because what you're hearing is the holy name.
Yes, yes, yes. Right, because hearing means then they'll be chanting. Right, but you hear it's the same. You're hearing the holy name. You're chanting the holy name. Vijaya, Gurudev. I understand that Hari Nam is transcendental. However, to accept without a trace of doubt that Hari Nam is in fact absolutely transcendental, even though the names are composed of apparently material sounds and syllables, then I must first realize how this is so. Kindly enlighten me on this aspect, right? Because coming from the Smarta background, right, the Smarta means there's the connection with the Karma Mimamsa. In the Karma Mimamsa, it's all about sound, right? I think it's what was it, Svotavad. It's this whole science of sound, that the particular sounds and combinations, then they produce a transformation in the material energy that gives the result that you're looking for. Does that make sense? So in other words, it's through endeavor that you get results. But they put, you know, great emphasis on the endeavor of chanting mantras, because by that, then the result you want is gained through that sound rather than making that effort for it. You know, the businessman goes out, does business. Here you chant mantras that are connected with economic development, and then one gets that. But that means then one has to have that pure lifestyle, follow the regulations, do the worship nicely, everything like that. That has to be perfect. Just as to do the business, he has to pay attention and do everything nicely. It's just a matter of, you know, what's the lifestyle. So then looking at it, that it's material sound vibrations, you know, the syllables that are there in the combinations, that's creating the thing. So the holy name is, even though it's transcendental, but the point is we're chanting it with our tongue, we're hearing it with our ear, we're working with it with the mind. All these are material. So then the question comes up, so actually, how is that sound transcendental? Mm-hmm. Right? This question was asked before. In the Krishna book, it's mentioned that the same question was asked long time before to Sanat Kumar, I think on Tapaloka. Mm-hmm. Right? It means the residents of Tapaloka were asking him, how is this possible? Because we know it's transcendental, but at the same time as we are using material senses and mind to deal with it. So how is it actually, you know, how does, mechanically it's transcendental, right? It means we have the faith that it's transcendental, but mechanically how does that work? Raghunath Das Babaji, the Padma Puran states, Krishna Nama is transcendentally blissful and bestows all spiritual benediction. For Krishna Nama is Krishna himself, the reservoir of all pleasure. Krishna Nama is complete and the form of all transcendental rasa. Krishna Nama is not a material name under any condition, and no less powerful than Krishna himself. Since Krishna Nama is transcendental to any material quality, there is no question of Krishna Nama being involved with Maya. Krishna Nama is always liberated and spiritual, never conditioned by the laws of material nature, because Krishna Nama and Krishna himself are identical. So the point is that the name that's coming in the bona fide lines of devotees, then this is transcendental, just like the deity. It may appear that there's that aspect that we can relate to, but the point is that the name himself is transcendental. Right? Does that make sense?
You said that unless you're in a proper sampradaya, then the name doesn't have that potency.
Yes, because then you are just chanting syllables. Like the Mayavadis, or this, they're just chanting the syllables. Like you go to Guruvayur when they do their elephant procession, it's a 3-hour long, and the whole time the kirtan party is only chanting Hare Krishna. Right? Or sometimes they have two parties. One will be singing, you know, some kind of bhajans and that. But one party is just chanting Hare Krishna the whole time. So you have this group, 3 hours a day, and that goes on every day. You know, that's the bigger one in the evening, but I think they have 3 or 5 elephant processions a day. We have one a week, like that. They do it at least three times. The other ones are short, but that one's 3 hours. The other ones, I think, are quite quick. You know what I'm saying? But the point is, it's not in Sampradaya, so they are just chanting material syllables. Right. Like that. That's the point. But if it's in Parampara, it's directly Krishna. Right, because it's imbued with the chit potency. Right, and Krishna and his potencies are non-different, so it's him. Does that make sense?
So the benefit they get is only if they
make I'm sure it's right? there's that the piety is there because they're following the Veda because they search this. What is it? Kali Santara?
Kali Santara.
Then it mentions chanting the holy name. Like that. Uh-huh. Right? So they're doing that. Mm-hmm. Right? But then the problem is then they don't... Because the idea, if they chant the holy name and they think it's good, then they might be inclined to go to a kirtan where they're chanting the holy name by bona fide Vaishnavas. Mm-hmm. Right? So that would be the benefit.
And if they don't, then they just go back to their normal mundane activities. They're not.
Yeah, basically. I mean, there'll be the piety of following the Veda and chanting, but the point is it will never give prema. Right. Does that make sense? Right.
That's the same like with the yoga, kirtan people who are chanting.
I mean, if it's not coming in sampradaya, then yeah, it's the same. Yeah. It means they'll get benefit, but you'll only get benefit within karma and jnana. You know, liberation and material. So you're not dealing with the transcendental name. But the point is, the transcendental that can give these. These are just side things. That comes automatically. For the devotee, facility and freedom from the material entanglement come automatically. Right? It's just how you define freedom, or what you define as facility. Does that make sense? Because on the material platform, you can't fulfill desires. But if one is satisfied, then whatever he has, he's satisfied with. Yes.
Does it give Sukriti?
Does it give Sukriti?
If you're chanting without in parampara, I mean.
He means the Sukriti because it's recommended by Shastra. You know, so many things give Sukriti.
So, yeah, so they would be more inclined to associate with devotees.
That's the ideas. Means in karma, then the ideas that you're performing those activities that require Brahmins, right? And if you're fortunate, then the Brahmins will be Vaishnavas, and then in that you'll get Vaishnava association. Right? It's not that the karma generates that Vaishnava association. It gives the opening for it. Right? Because the householder has to feed Brahmins. Mm-hmm. He has to perform samskaras and yajnas and other ceremonies with Brahmins. He's supposed to hear discussions on scriptures from Brahmins. Mm-hmm. All this. But if he's not so... doesn't have the Sukriti, then he'll always end up with other smarter Brahmins and never actually get the benefit. Mm-hmm. Right? Same with the paths of Jnana, that would be the thing of renunciation, and that, then there's more discussion on philosophy. Mm-hmm. Right? Or in this case, then they're following the rituals of the Vedic worship, Upasana Kanta. Right? But in there, you're supposed to be chanting God's name. So in any of these, there's the opportunity that devotees are doing programs, they're taking Vishad, they're doing kirtan, they're doing deity worship, they're discussing the philosophy. All these different things are there. Right? So one could come in contact. Right? In other words, he's one of the persons that's in that Harinam party, and if the devotees are doing a Harinam, then he might be inclined to go along with them. Right? But if he's not, because, they're Vaishnavas, so then he doesn't, then...
Too bad.
Yeah. It's like a Vaishnav Das. Right? He's there, he's renounced, he's doing all his different whatever he's doing. But then he hears the Vaishnavas, chanting and like that, and he sees some reactions to that he's never experienced before.
Yeah.
Like that. Does that make sense? Vijaya, how can the sound vibration of Krishna Nam be different from mundane sounds? How can it be supra mundane? Raghunath Das Babaji. Krishna Nam is not a product of this material universe. When the jiva attains a sarup in the transcendental realm, he is eligible to pronounce Shuddha Krishna Nam. Now in his present condition, under the enslavement of Maya and covered with gross material senses, the jiva is unqualified to utter Shuddha Krishna Nam. Nonetheless, by the unconditional mercy of Ladini Shakti, Srimati Radharani, when the sarup of the purified jiva begins to emerge, then Shuddha Nam automatically begins to manifest within the fertile field of purified consciousness. Shuddha Krishna Nam appears and dances upon the devotedly enlivened tongue of the devotee by the infinite compassion of Sri Krishna himself. Krishna Nam does not possess a mundane form in the shape of material sounds and syllables, but possesses a Satchitananda form of eternal transcendental bliss and knowledge. When Krishna Nam gambols upon the tongue of the Shuddha Bhakta, he may appear to be material sounds and syllables to those whose consciousness is covered by Maya. However, he is always pure and transcendental. This is the esoteric mystery which surrounds Krishna Nam. So in other words, Krishna Nam is coming from that's what it means. It's Harinam. Harinam Sanktitan. Golokera Premadan, Harinam Sanktitan. It's coming from Goloka, the sound. Right? That's coming from there. It may appear to the mundaner that it's normal sounds, but it's not. This is transcendental sound. That's all. So, therefore, as the devotee becomes more situated in pure devotion, then therefore that pure name also becomes more and more manifest. Vijaya, which is the sweetest among the principal names? Raghunath Das Babaji, the Satanama Stotra states, one name of Sri Vishnu is superior to all the Vedic mantras, and one name of Sri Rama is more potent than 1,000 names of Sri Vishnu. Then the Brahmananda Purana states, when the 1,000 transcendental names of Sri Vishnu are chanted 3 times, they are equivalent to chanting 1 name of Krishna. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, so the Vishnu Sahasranam, then that states that 1 name of Vishnu is superior to all the Vedic mantras. Right? And then 1,000 names of Vishnu is equal to 1 name of Ram. Right? And then in the Brahmananda Purana, then it says 1,000 names of Vishnu, so 3,000 names of Vishnu, that's equal to 1 name of Krishna. Right? So 1,000 names is equal to 1 name of Rama. Right? Does that make sense? So the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra then is made up of all these names that, just by chanting that one mantra, you're getting the benefit of thousands of, names of Vishnu. And that's, basically you say, unlimitedly great amounts of Vedic mantras. Right? Does that make sense? Thus, we see that Krishna is the supreme name. Therefore, we should also always follow the instruction of Sri Gauranga and chant the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vijaya, what is the process of Harinam Sadhana? Raghunath Das Babaji, right? Interesting, because the name is received from the devotees, right? Very rare we see someone receiving it directly from the Lord, right? And so the devotees are talking about the Maha Mantra here in this form. But then some unscrupulous persons, they try to go back, well, where is this mantra written? In Chaitanya Charitamrita or Chaitanya Bhagavat or like that. How do we know it's this name? But the point is those persons who are the eternal associates are saying this is the name, and you're getting it from them anyway, so that should work.
We'll take the word for it.
Yeah, take their word for it. Vijaya, what is the process of Harinam Sadhana? Raghunath Das, one must chant Harinam upon a set of Tulsi beads, but if beads are not available, one may count upon the fingers. In any case, one must chant Krishna Nama continuously without committing offenses. The final benediction of chanting purely is Krishna Prema. The reason for chanting upon beads or counting upon one's fingers is to ensure reaching a fixed number of Krishna Nama and to note whether one's chanting is increasing or not. Right? You can tell if you're chanting more by if you're counting how many rounds you do. Right? So at least you're chanting a certain amount and you can tell if it's increasing. Tulsi Devi is very dear to the Supreme Lord. Therefore, chanting Harinam in contact with her in the form of Tulsi beads enhances one's feelings and attachment for Harinam. While one is chanting, one should always remember that Krishna and Krishna Nam are identical. Okay. Vijaya, Gurudev, there are 9 limbs of bhakti practice, which are further subdivided into 64 items. Chanting Harinam is one of them. If we shall chant incessantly, where is the time to execute any of the other limbs? Right? Raghunath Das Babaji. The proposal to chant incessantly does not present a contradiction, for the 64 divisions are included within the 9 limbs of bhakti. These 9 organs of bhakti can be executed in any form, through deity worship in the temple, or by chanting in solitude, or by chanting in the association of elevated devotees. To hear, chant, remember, serve, and so on in the presence of the deities is factually in the category of chanting Harinam. When one is unable to chant before the deities, one may recollect the deities within one's mind and then hear, chant, remember, and serve the deities. In this way, one may execute all the 9 processes of bhakti within the mind in the form of chanting Harinam. Those who are fortunate by the blessings of the Lord have a special ruchi for constant chanting. Automatically, they are simultaneously engaged in all the 9 branches of bhakti. Certainly, chanting Harinam is the most potent of all the 9 limbs. Therefore, when the devotee chants in full ecstasy, even though none of the other limbs are apparently visible, actually there is nothing lacking. So in other words, all the 64 in the 9, and of that you're hearing and chanting, remembering, and all that is there. So it can be done in connection with the deity worship or just chanting itself. because deity worship includes that. So when you're chanting, you'll be serving, you'll be doing all the other things. So someone who's chanting the holy name is already engaged in all the activities that are important. Yes.
Whereas chanting Shuddha Nama is only possible when one is situated in the mode of pure Venus.
It's the Shuddha Nama means it's freed from, one is chanting to please Krishna, right, under the authority of Guru, without a desire for karma jnana. That's Shuddha Nama. You know what I'm saying? Because the point is while you're chanting, that can be Shuddha. Maybe when you're not chanting, you might be in, you know, not on the, you know, in pure goodness. Yeah, but the point is that chanting can, will be. The idea is you're trying to get it by this chanting that all the time you're on that platform. So then you're always chanting, always engaged in the Lord's service. Because he's pointing out, even you're worshiping the deities, doing all those different things, that's still all chanting the Lord's name. Because the name and Krishna are non-different. So the point is you're still connected with Krishna. That's what Bhaktisiddhanta says, what he talked about. He had the point, if you're always chanting, preaching, doing service connected to Krishna, that's the same as chanting. So for him, the preachers are chanting 64 rounds. He sees it like that because the name and Krishna are non-different. So anything being done for Krishna then is chanting. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why someone advances, even the newest person, they come along, but they're not, you know, that committed. So they just come and do some service, you know, and if the kirtan's there, this, they go to it. But it's not that they're chanting, you know, a fixed number of rounds, or they're even connected with chanting japa at all. But they're advancing because it's still Krishna. Is that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So anything.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
Samaveta
Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainatai Govardhana ki.